What does it mean when you say fine for littering? Let's discuss it. I'm Dr. Fred, and you're listening to Study, Grow, Know.
Welcome to Study, Grow, Know, where we discuss theology, prophecy, and current political issues from a conservative biblical perspective. Here's your host, Dr. Fred DeRuvo.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Fred, and you're listening to another broadcast episode of Study, Grow, Know. And we've been dealing with interpreting the Bible literally is not as confusing as it sounds. And yesterday, I left you with this statement, fine for littering. Fine for littering. Now, if you think about the idea of interpreting the Bible and the problems that can go with it when people do not use the correct hermeneutic or the proper tools to rightly understand the Bible, it can become a problem. And having considered this dilemma for some time, it seems to me that, as in any conversation, written or spoken, what people strive to achieve is a sense of the actual meaning of what they hear or read. Now, it's obvious that people speaking the same language can and do understand one another. That's obvious. And yet, even with that, people can misunderstand one another. No one hears or reads something literally and then makes absolutely no accommodations for the actual sense of what is meant. In other words, as mentioned at the beginning of these series of lessons, we all hear things and read things in our daily lives that are not meant to be taken literally. And because we understand that, we understand when metaphors or figurative language are being used, and our minds replace the literal words with the actual meaning that those literal words imply, not the literal meaning of the words themselves. Now, over a lifetime as an educator, I have worked with students with varying degrees of disability, and one thing I've noticed early on was that when I taught students with autism spectrum disorder, it is imperative that statements made to them are statements that reflect what is meant. Because of the rigid thinking of these individuals, they interpret what is said to them in a literal manner. So for instance, if you're driving along the road and you see a sign that says fine for littering, you would understand that to mean that it is not only against the law to litter, but if you litter and are caught, you will receive a fine, which could range anywhere from a few $100 to a couple of $1,000s, depending upon where you are. Now, an individual with autism spectrum disorder may see the same sign and will likely take those words literally and understand that same sign to be saying that it is perfectly okay to toss litter onto the highway. Do you see the point when it says fine for littering? They would not be attempting to be sarcastic, but to be truly serious. One phrase can literally be understood in two completely different ways to two different individuals. So for the average individual, fine for littering means just that. You're going to get a fine if you throw things on the highway and you get caught. But to the individual with autism spectrum disorder, when they see a sign that says fine for littering, they understand it to mean, oh, it's perfectly okay to litter here. Most people who are not on the autism spectrum disorder scale would never make the mistake of understanding a sign like that to say anything other than the fact that it's against the law to litter and a fine will be the result if you're caught. Well, they might joke about it, but they would not seriously entertain the idea that littering is acceptable. And it's likely universally agreed that the sign that says fine for littering and to take it to mean that it is against the law to litter with a resultant fine for doing so would be to take the sign literally based on its actual meaning. Who would seriously argue that we are not taking the words of that sign literally if we understood it to say that you shouldn't litter? So why is it when we approach the Bible, those of us who attempt to be consistent in our understanding of it are accused of not being literalists or not truly using the literal method if we do the exact same thing where Scripture is concerned that we did with respect to that road sign? Yet this is exactly what happens. Folks who allegorize parts of Scripture, and by allegorizing I mean making it appear to say it's kind of a metaphor. You see the Scripture and you, even though you understand the literal words, you see something symbolic in them. Folks who do that to Scripture do so when they believe it's legitimate to do so. And unfortunately, many of their instances of allegorizing seem to have nothing more than a subjective reason for doing so. And in reality, the trend to allegorize or spiritualize the biblical text has no real hard and fast rule for these folks. They simply seem to do it as it suits them. In fact, if you read a number of commentaries on Revelation by preterists or covenant theologians, you will undoubtedly find any number of interpretations, all of which are simply stated without much by way of proving any direct connection with the text and what it actually says. It is not uncommon for covenant theologians to state that prophecy should always be taken allegorically, yet there is no good reason to make this hard and fast rule. While on one hand, their interpretation may seem plausible, it may seem to make sense to us at first glance, but it simply doesn't hold up well under scrutiny on the other hand. Now, the literalist attempts to determine the actual meaning of the text and wants to be able to prove that he or she has arrived at a conclusion based on what he or she believes the text actually means. And that is extremely important. It is necessary, then, not only to arrive at, you know, conclusions we study as we study the Bible, but it's also imperative that the conclusions we arrive at have basis in the actual meaning. Anything else we conclude must be eliminated. So in the next few lessons, what we're going to be doing is we will take a look at a number of examples from the Bible, just like we've already done, and we're going to show how a literalist would gain meaning from the text as opposed to how one might allegorize the same thing. The end result will not only be completely different from one who allegorizes, but the method that gets the person to that end result will also be dramatically different. It will be your task as a listener to determine which one you think carries more weight and why. And again, I want to point out here that this is all written down in a book I wrote called Interpreting the Bible Literally, with a subtitle, Is Not as Confusing as You Think. And it's really, seriously, the point. It's not as confusing, and it shouldn't be that confusing. Now, that's not to say that Bible study is easy. Bible study can be very complex because there are a number of things that you need to take into consideration. And I'm going to get into that in just a minute. So what have we gained from this particular lesson? We've gained the understanding, hopefully, that words by themselves can mean any number of things. And there are a number of things that come into play that ultimately make the difference between an incorrect and a correct meaning. Now, you may have heard this term before, literal hermeneutic. Literal hermeneutic, or the historical grammatical literal hermeneutic. But instead of me calling it the literal hermeneutic, I'm going to coin a phrase if I can. Since what we're doing is determining the actual, which is the same as literal, the actual meaning from the words that we read, it makes more sense to call this the actual essential meaning hermeneutic. The actual essential meaning hermeneutic would then consist of a number of sub-elements which allow us to determine the actual meaning of words and phrases. For instance, context. Context acts as the guide which helps lead us to the goal by providing direction. A strict definition of contents might read like this: the parts of a discourse that surround a word or passage and can throw light on its meaning. And that's from the Merriam-Webster Dictionary. In essence, then, it would be absurd to attempt to understand word meaning apart from its context. At the beginning of this book, or the beginning of my lessons to you, based on my book, the word left was utilized as an example of the way a word can be understood, but only in light of the words that surround that. You remember that? I mentioned the example of driving in a taxi and asking the driver to turn left at the next stoplight. And then I also said when I arrived at my destination, I looked in my wallet only to realize that I had only a few dollars left in my wallet. It's the same word, but the meaning is completely different based on the context. So it's important to take into consideration the context of everything prior to arriving at a solid conclusion. So context is one part of the actual essential meaning hermeneutic. Grammar is another part. Grammar gets right to the heart of the words themselves by informing us what individual words or phrases mean. Now, moreover, what did they mean when they were originally written in the work that is now being interpreted? That's extremely important. Many words have obviously changed meaning over the course of time, and some words even have become completely outmoded, no longer used at all. Because of this, it's imperative, it's extremely important to have a full understanding of all possible word meanings, especially the meaning of the word when it was first used. So what this means is, when we read the Bible that was written 2,000 years ago, 3,000, 4,000 years ago, we need to understand what those words meant when they were first written, not what they mean to us today. What do they mean when they were first written? So we've got context. Grammar. The next part of the actual essential hermeneutic, or the actual essential meaning hermeneutic, is history. What is the history surrounding the teaching or information provided within the context of Scripture? Is it legitimate to understand Scripture in light of today's culture, or is it more appropriate to seek to gain the meaning by comprehending, for instance, Judaism during the Old Testament, as well as the New Testament times, since it has changed over time? Given that it is out of Judaism that we have the Bible at all, would the minds of Jews who physically penned the Bible under God's supernatural guidance have played any part at all in determining what words were used, and especially which figures of speech or idioms were chosen as well, and what those words, those figures of speech, those idioms meant when they first wrote them? So we've got context, grammar, and history as part of the actual essential meaning hermeneutic. But we've got something else. Scripture, interpreting Scripture. This is arguably the largest part of arriving at an accurate understanding of what is being taught in the text of Scripture. While it's very important to leave the words in their original context, understand the grammar that was originally used, and know the history of the human author and the words and culture and the circumstances surrounding the book that he penned, it's of the utmost importance to understand that even though the Bible is written by 40 authors, extending to a period of more than 1400 to 1600 years total in writing, allowing Scripture to speak on its own behalf is the most important thing we can do. This is one of the major ways that alleged contradictions in Scripture are explained and eliminated entirely, by allowing Scripture to interpret itself. Do you know that there are verses in Revelation that are actually interpreted for us in the book of Genesis? But if you don't know that, you're going to just simply possibly take a meaning that you think might make sense and apply it to those verses. But we don't have to guess. We can sit there and realize that the words used in certain parts of the book of Revelation have found meaning for us in the book of Genesis. So together, these four aspects of the actual essential meaning hermeneutic, the context, the grammar, the history, and Scripture interpreting Scripture, those four aspects provide the student of Scripture with the consistency that is often longed for but not often realized. If we will but take the time to realize that the Bible was not written in a vacuum, that it has an historical context, and if we seek to understand the meaning of the words used at the time they were first written, and if we stop yanking Scripture out of context, we are well on our way to arriving at an interpretation that is consistent with God's intent. And that's the important part. And moreover, as a double check, if we scrutinize Scripture against Scripture, it will speak to us and proclaim its truth readily. And that's our show for today. I hope I've given you something to think about, because there's a great deal of responsibility in interpreting Scripture. We can't approach the Bible lightly. We cannot sit there and say, well, this is what I think it says. No, no, no. We have to be sure as we possibly can, that what we are teaching is what God has meant. And if we're not willing and able to do that, we have no business reading or quoting the Bible to begin with. So when you get into Scripture, I hope you will take these things in mind. And until we meet next time, I pray that God will open your eyes to show you how richly He has blessed you. Hi, I'm Dr. Fred of Study Grow Know Ministries. And besides my weekly radio program, I've written numerous books and commentaries specifically geared for the average person. My books cover a variety of theological topics like prophecy, UFOs and aliens, and even current political issues. You can find them on Amazon.com or through our website, studygrowknow.com. That's studygrowknow.com. Regardless of the subject, I offer a biblical conservative perspective on these and other subjects. So please join me, Dr. Fred, with Study Grow Know Ministries on this radio station every week and look for my books. We cover issues that are important to you.
You've been listening to Study Grow Know with Dr. Fred DeRuvo. Please join us each week for new broadcasts that deal with theology, prophecy, and political issues from a biblical, conservative perspective.